Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, crime stories. Later on, we hear Dick Powell in suspense. But right now, it's Danger with Granger, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from 1956 called The Phone Call Threat.
Granger. Hello?
Is this the Blake residence?
Yes.
I want to speak to Mr. Blake.
This is Blake speaking.
You're inaugurating a new flight on Cross-Continent Airlines tomorrow, aren't you?
Suppose we are. What about it?
You've been having a little trouble recently, haven't you, Blake?
What are you talking about? Who are you?
I just want to give you a little advice. Don't go on that new luxury flight tomorrow night.
Why not?
Because something might happen to you. Something very unpleasant.
Listen, you...
It might even turn out to be murder.
This is Steve Granger, private detective, with a story about a phone call threat, an air trip, and a murder. With as neat a double twist as I've ever met. In just a moment, I'll take you back to one of my most interesting cases. This is Granger, and I'm at LaGuardia Airport, that marvelous maze of aerial activity that handles a large percentage of travel in and out of Manhattan. With me is my boon companion, the newspaper man, Cal Hendricks.
Steve, I don't like it at all.
You don't like what at all,
this
Cal?
This flying business. I tell you, man has no business up in the air. If he had, he'd grow wings.
Cal, you're as old-fashioned as a bustle.
Ah, well, I think you're taking on a dumb assignment, Granger. Who'd want to commit a murder in an airplane?
I know, Cal. Just take it easy, will you?
I'm telling you, it's daffy. How would a killer escape from an airplane?
Look, you figure it out when you get home. My plane leaves right away.
Want to take out some insurance, chum?
Stop singing the blues.
Do me a favor, huh?
Sure, what?
Call me from time to time. I got a funny feeling.
That's your lumbago.
Announcing the departure of Cross-Continental Airlines, now loading at gate number 7. All aboard, please.
Well, that's it. See you later, Cal. Thanks for coming out of the airport with me.
You sure you don't want that insurance?
No, I do not. I walked down the long ramp at LaGuardia. The attendant took my ticket, marked a number on the envelope, and nodded me through the gate. I looked at the plane I was approaching, crouched like a giant three-legged beetle, blinking its red and green eyes. I must have been the last person aboard. Most of the seats were taken.
Good evening, sir.
Hiya.
There are some seats up front, if you'd like to sit there.
No, I'll just take this one here.
Please fasten your seatbelt.
Sure. I buckled myself in and leaned back. The plane waddled out to the end of a runway, paused while the pilots checked manifold pressure, oil gauges, and 100 other details, got an okay from the control tower and took off. A moment later, New York was 2,000 feet below me, its million and one lights flickering like fireflies in Technicolor.
And your name, sir?
Granger, Steve Granger.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
By the way, could I ask you a question?
Of course.
You have any trouble on these flights?
No, Mr. Granger. Cross-Continent never has any trouble whatsoever.
Oh?
I'd like to ask you a question if you won't think I'm nosy or something.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, the girls at the counter were talking tonight about having a detective on this flight.
Oh, they were?
It seems that somebody in the company is worried that something might happen.
Was that so?
You wouldn't know anything about that, would you, Mr. Granger?
Why should I?
Because you were a detective. You dropped your wallet in the aisle when you sat down.
And you looked inside it?
Obviously.
That's very nice of you.
Don't misunderstand me. I had to look inside it. I didn't know whose wallet it was.
That all?
Yes.
Thanks so much.
Don't mention it, Mr. Granger.
I won't. And I hope you won't either. The rest of the flight was made with no further incident. The hostess... Her name was Sylvia Mitchell. Ignored me pleasantly. When I got off at the airport in another city, Richard Blake was waiting for me. We drove into town in his car.
I trust you had a pleasant trip, Mr. Granger.
No complaints.
You noticed nothing unusual?
Nope, not a thing. You haven't said much about your expected trouble, Mr. Blake.
There isn't much to tell. I've been getting some threats.
Man or woman?
A man. He's called twice.
Anybody else here?
My wife. I let her listen in.
No idea who we might be?
None at all.
How many people have you told that I've been employed by you, Mr. Blake?
Why, none. I wanted this matter handled very quietly.
Trust your secretary?
Implicitly. But even if I didn't, she wouldn't know about you.
Why not?
I called you from my home. The only other person who knows I made that call is Mrs. Blake.
Richard Blake dropped me off at the hotel where he'd reserved a room for me, and I arranged to be in his office next day. He seemed sure that there'd be another mysterious phone call. So I made certain plans. It was late in the afternoon when Blake's phone rang.
This might be him now.
Hold the receiver away from your ear a bit so I can hear, too.
Hello?
That you, Blake?
Who is this? I most certainly am.
Think you'll ever make it?
Now, look here.
I don't think you will.
He hung up.
There should be another call right away. I found a pal in the telephone company. That's it.
Yes? This is Blake. You did? Splendid. Thank you.
You sound surprised.
I am. That call was made from a place called the Firefly. It's a sort of bar and restaurant.
Oh?
It also happens to be a spot where practically all the personnel of Cross Continent Airlines spend their spare time.
I think I'll wander over there. The Firefly was no different from any other joint. The lights were low, the prices probably high. I swiveled my hip into a bar stool and looked around. Music came out of a hole in the ceiling. And an airline hostess came out of a hole in the wall. It was my friend of last night's flight, Sylvia Mitchell.
Well, Mr. Granger, you've found our little hideout.
So I have. Have a drink?
I don't think so, thanks.
Tell me something. Why is it you seem to know so much about cross-continent gossip?
Do I?
You knew about me. You also knew something is supposed to happen. How come?
Mr. Granger, I merely listen when people talk. They do, you know.
That's what I wish you'd do. Talk.
You're trying to make something out of nothing, Mr. Granger. I heard a rumor or two. That's it.
Just the same, I still want to hear...
Hi, baby. You ready to go?
Oh, yeah. By the way, this is Captain Gately. He was the captain on last night's flight.
Hi.
This is Steve Granger, Hank.
Yeah, the great detective, huh?
You can say that if you like.
I can say it if I don't like to.
It's what I like about you. You're so courteous.
Come on, baby. Let's blow.
Hey, bartender, how about a drink? Scotch and water, huh?
Why not? Mix it.
Thanks. Does he ever notice who uses the phone around here?
Buddy, take a look at that wall. There are six of them.
Yeah, I know. Did you notice anybody making a call about 15 minutes ago?
Anybody? Listen, pal, more dates come out of those phones than from all the palm trees in California. Say, look, has this got something to do with cross-continent airlines?
Suppose it has.
Go talk to that blonde babe sitting at that table.
Why?
She happens to be the president's wife, Mrs. Richard Blake.
The president's wife was one of those golden blondes everybody likes to look at. I placed her age at some years less than her husband's. And I decided to move in. Hi, Mrs. Blake.
Hello. Do I know you?
No, but maybe you've heard of me. It's Steve Granger.
Oh, of course. Sit down. Have a drink?
Why, thanks. Been here long?
About an hour. Why?
Somebody phoned your husband from here. A man.
Was it the same one who phoned last night?
Your husband says it was. Did you notice anybody making a call about 15 minutes ago?
Not especially.
You certainly got your husband worried.
There are other reasons for his worrying.
Like what?
Like Earl Fulton.
And who is Earl Fulton?
He and my husband Richard were lifelong friends. When Richard took over Cross Continent, Earl helped him financially. Now he's suddenly withdrawn his support.
Why?
They had an argument in New York.
New York?
Yes. Cross Continent has a big office there.
I thanked Mrs. Blake, told her I'd see her later, and beat it back to my hotel. I called Cal Hendricks in New York and asked him to see if he could find out what the argument between Richard Blake and Earl Fulton was about. Later in the day, I tried talking to Blake about it, but he wouldn't give me any information. All he did was give me instructions to be aboard the Cross Continent's new luxury flight at 11 that night, and not to recognize him when he came aboard himself. At 11 p.m. that night, I was aboard the plane. I met some people I hadn't expected to.
Good evening, Mr. Granger. Like a seat up front?
No, thanks, Miss Mitchell. I'll park back here, right at your elbow.
Very well. Oh, why, Mr. Fulton, I didn't think we'd have you aboard.
I'm here, as you can see, Miss Mitchell.
I took a good look at Earl Fulton as the hostess showed him to his seat, and I carefully looked aside when Richard Blake walked past me, but not so far aside that I didn't notice that he took the seat next to Fulton. Then I heard a familiar voice.
Good evening, Miss Mitchell. Got a seat for an old lady.
Mrs. Blake, how nice. Mm-hmm. Your husband's up front.
Oh, I don't think I want to sit with Richard. He's going to try and make it up with Earl Fulton. I'll just spend a little time with Mr. Granger.
I engaged Mrs. Blake in idle chatter while my eyes swept the cabin in front of me. No one on board the plane looked suspicious in any way that I could determine. By that time, we had taken off and were cruising towards New York in true luxury. Then Sylvia Mitchell came back aft and turned off the cabin lights.
Oh, that makes it more comfortable, don't you think, Mr. Granger?
No, I don't. Hey, Miss Mitchell.
Yes?
Why'd you turn off the top lights?
Well, we always do on a night flight. Are you afraid of me, Mr. Granger?
I'd love to sit in the dark with you, Mrs. Blake, any place at any time except in this plane tonight.
Well, really?
So turn them back on, Miss Mitchell.
I don't believe I have to take orders from you.
I think you do. And if you still won't turn those lights back on, I'll have Mr. Blake tell you to do it.
Very well. That better?
Much better. Eleanor Blake gave me a gentle ribbing about brave detectives who were afraid of the dark, middle-aged ladies like herself. My eyes stayed glued to the front seat where her husband sat next to Earl Fulton. I excused myself to Mrs. Blake and moved up the aisle of the plane, looking over every person on board. Richard Blake was chewing gum. Earl Fulton sat next to him, stiff as a ramrod.
Well, did your inspection tour turn out as you wished, Mr. Granger?
It did, Mrs. Blake. Tell me, why didn't you want to sit with your husband?
Because he's with Earl. I told you before.
Yeah, so you did.
Miss Mitchell! Miss Mitchell!
Uh-oh, something's happened. You stay here, Mrs. Blake.
Miss Mitchell, you've got to do something about Mr. Blake.
What's wrong, Mr. Fulton?
I'm sure I don't know. He was sitting here chewing gum. Suddenly he coughed and slumped over against me. I can't seem to wake him up.
Well, I'd better go up into the cockpit and get some oxygen.
1 second. Mr. Blake! Mr. Blake! Miss Mitchell, tell the captain of this flight to make an emergency landing at the nearest field.
But why?
Mr. Blake is dead. Well, it had happened, all right. Murder within the confines of a traveling aircraft. And the question was not only how, but who. While the first flight of the new Cross Continent Airlines luxury liner was really going to make headlines with the company's head, Richard Blake, dead in his seat, the captain of the aircraft arrived on the scene, and he was someone else I hadn't expected to see. Hank Gately, the Firefly companion of the hostess, Miss Sylvia Mitchell.
Miss Mitchell, give me your message. Where is Mr. Blake?
In that seat.
I'll have a look at him.
He's dead.
I'll determine that, Granger, not you. Yeah, no pulse. I get the flight engineer to help me take the body up for him.
I don't like to tell anybody the business, Gately, but This happens to be murder. The police wouldn't like the idea of you moving the body.
Granger, I am the captain on this flight. I can do anything I want, or do I make myself plain?
At this point, you're almost obnoxious.
I'm in command here, so go back, sit down, and mind your own business.
Maybe.
No, maybe about it. Oh, wait a minute. I think you better come forward with the body.
Are you arresting me?
I'm just keeping you from being more of a nuisance than you are.
Okay, Sonny. But when we get downstairs on the ground, stay away from me. I didn't give Gately any more trouble, just walked through the doorway up into the flight deck. He and the flight engineer brought Blake's body up a second later and laid it on one of the two bunks. I got my first good look at Richard Blake's face. It was distorted in pain. I bent over and found out what had killed him. The bitter odor of almonds indicated prussic acid. I wondered how he got it. When all three men in the cockpit had their backs to me, I slipped out the door and moved to the seat where Richard Blake died. I looked down, then bent over and retrieved a wad of chewing gum, holding it in my handkerchief. It, too, gave off the odor of the deadly poison. Errol Fulton was among the missing. I hadn't seen him up forward, so reasoned that he must be back in the stern of the ship in the lounge. I moved that way. As I passed my own seat, Mrs. Blake stopped me.
Mr. Granger.
Yes, Mrs. Blake.
Just a moment. I saw them taking Richard up into the cockpit. Miss Mitchell wouldn't let me come up.
Mrs. Blake, you see...
He's dead, isn't he?
I'm terribly sorry, Mrs. Blake.
How did he die?
Poison.
Poison? But how did it happen?
The coroner will tell you that. I excused myself and moved back towards the lounge. But there was one more interruption. The hostess, Sylvia Mitchell.
Did you tell her, Granger?
I had to. Is Fulton in the lounge?
Yes. He has to be left alone back there.
I hate to disturb him, but he's going to have company. Mr. Fulton?
Please, let me alone.
I'm afraid I can't do that. I'm a private detective. Mr. Blake hired me to stop exactly what has happened.
He's dead?
Thoroughly.
Oh, this is terrible. Poor Eleanor, the publicity...
What are you talking about?
Well, he must have committed suicide.
I don't think so, Mr. Fulton.
You don't mean he was murdered?
Did you notice anything unusual about his actions?
No, he came up and sat next to me purposely. He started to beg me not to withdraw my support from Cross Continent.
What was your answer?
Mr. Granger, Richard Blake had been embezzling money from the company for a year. The auditors found it out and informed me. Mr. Blake was going to jail as a result.
But you didn't notice anything unusual about his actions here in the plane?
No, he tried to talk to me, even offered me some gum, and I took it from him. Suddenly, he gave a sort of gasping cough. The next moment, he fell over against me.
Mr. Fulton, my ears is stuffing up a little. Do you have any chewing gum?
No, I don't believe so, but...
Take your hands out of your coat pocket, Mr. Fulton.
Why, I
thanks. You don't believe you have gum, but you do. Four little packets like they pass out on all planes. Where'd you get them? From Miss Mitchell?
I don't remember ever getting these.
Very interesting. And look at the corner of each little packet. A little red dot. A dot that could have been made by... say, nail polish.
I don't know anything about that.
I walked back up the aisle towards the seat the two men had occupied. When I got there, I looked on the floor and found nothing. Then I slipped one of the ashtrays open and found something. A cellophane wrapper that originally had held two chewing gum tablets. A wrapper that had a red dot on it. I examined the other ashtray and came up with another cellophane wrapper. But this one had no nail polish mark at all.
Mr. Granger.
Just one second, Miss Mitchell. Did you give either Mr. Blake or Mr. Fulton chewing gum when we took off?
No, I didn't.
Hmm.
I just wanted to let you know Captain Gately is going back to the field. He got instructions from the police.
30 minutes later, the big luxury liner landed right back where it had started from. The passengers were loaded on another plane and sent on their way. Richard Blake's body was sent to the morgue. An efficient police officer faced Errol Fulton, whose face was as white as snow, with an expression just as frozen.
Mr. Granger tells me you had these four wrappers of chewing gum in your pocket. What are the fingernail polish markings for, Mr. Fulton?
I don't know. I never saw them before.
You claim somebody might have placed them in your pocket, surreptitiously.
Well, they must have.
Mr. Fulton, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to accompany me to police headquarters.
I'm under arrest.
Suspicion, Mr. Fulton. Definite suspicion.
I asked the police officer for one of the chewing gum packets and stuffed it in my pocket. A nearby druggist told me the packet contained gum that was perfectly safe. I noticed that Captain Gately and the hostess Sylvia Mitchell had left together. I got her home address and went there. I listened outside her door to a tremendous argument taking place between the pilot and the hostess regarding a woman who wasn't named. When Gately left, I moved in.
You? What do you want here?
A short talk. Look at one of your beauty accessories.
I don't know what you mean.
Then I'll tell you. Sylvia Mitchell, do you want to be held as an accessory in a murder case?
What? No.
Will you answer some questions?
Yes, anything.
Sylvia Mitchell told me that she and Captain Gately had been practically engaged, which is how she'd got her dope on the mysterious events around Cross Continent. Lately, Captain Gately had chilled in his affection for her. And the Mitchell girl told me enough to send me back to the Firefly with another question.
Sure, sure. Those two had their heads together all the time.
This apartment house was the end of the chase, I hoped. I could hear voices inside. One certain one.
I've got to get rid of Sylvia. She guessed that we changed those packets of chewing gum.
Well, does she know about me?
I'm afraid so. That bartender at the Firefly can't keep his mouth shut.
Now we can never make it look like it was Richard's idea.
I could guess the rest of the story.
Steve Granger.
Yeah, up with your hands, Gately. What are you doing around
here?
Just
checking on a chief pilot of an airline and a wife who wanted to get rid of her husband so bad she poisoned him.
I did no such thing.
No? Hold it, you two.
Nice fingernail polish, Mrs. Blake. The same shade that was on the chewing gum pack.
I had nothing to do with it. It was that hostess.
She uses iridescent polish. This is solid color. The police lab will verify that.
Mr. Granger, listen to me.
Sure I will. Did your husband plan on poisoning Earl Fulton? Is that why you offered him gum? A packet of gum that was marked with a red dot indicating to Mr. Blake that it contained poison, is that it?
Yes, that's it.
Tell him, oh, shut up.
But you and Gately wanted to get rid of your husband, didn't you? So you got a new set of gum packets. Only this time, the ones marked in red contain no poison. Double-crossing Blake.
You're too smart for your own good, Snoop.
But Blake, not knowing this, took the poison packet and slipped the others into Fulton's pockets, according to plan. His plan.
Mr. Granger, don't say any more.
But his plan failed, and yours worked, Mrs. Blake. Yours and Gately.
I didn't have anything to do with it.
Squirming out, Gately. Looks like he's going to leave you with it, Mrs. Blake.
He made the phone calls. It was my husband's idea.
Thank you, Mrs. Blake. And I was brought up here as a front, huh? Your husband was doing everything to see that his airline was protected. Nice trio, you three.
Out of my way, Elmer!
You'll never live to tell anyone that story, Granger,
won't I?
Well, friends, that's the story. I'll be back to wrap up the case in just a minute.
This is Dr. Newton K. Wesley of the National Eye Research Foundation with a word of caution for contact lens wearers. Most wearers know one of the best ways to avoid infection is to employ sanitary methods when inserting or removing the contact lenses. Hands should be washed thoroughly before handling. The contact lenses should be cleaned with the proper solution before inserting. When you remove the contact lenses, clean them again before placing them into your case. Proper antiseptic solution, according to your doctor's instructions, will result in greater comfort and longer wearing time. If you do not have the proper solution for cleaning your contact lenses, ask your eye doctor for his recommendation. If contact lens wearers will follow this advice, they will wear their contacts in greater comfort and greatly reduce the danger of infection. Antiseptic contact lenses are also an aid in such a reduction. Ask your eye doctor for more information on sanitary methods on your next visit.
I had to shoot, finally, in self-defense. Captain Gately went to the morgue to lie next to Richard Blake. Mrs. Blake went to jail on a murder rap. Sylvia Mitchell went there, too, and later was released. I got Earl Fulton out, got myself an airplane, and went back to New York.
Steve, say, I'm glad to see you. Are you all right?
Sure, I'm all right. What's the matter with you? Come on, let's blow.
Okay. Yes, sir, I'm certainly happy to see you back on the ground
again. Yeah, sure, Cal.
Wouldn't want anything to happen to my best friend.
Nice of you, Cal. Hey, what's that you're tearing up?
Oh, well, $25,000 air trip insurance policy.
Oh, thanks.
Well, if anything happened to you, I just wanted to have a little something to remember you by.
Like 25,000 fish? My old pal. Steve Granger again. You've just heard one of the most interesting cases in my files. And I'll have another one for you. So be around next time.
Danger with Granger on Tuned to Yesterday, a relatively rare broadcast from that Mutual series heard in 1956. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now the man who starred as Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery and in Richard Diamond Private Detective, Dick Powell, takes on a more sinister role in this episode of Suspense called Slow Burn, first heard on February 23, 1950 on CBS.
Suspense. Transcribed Mr. Dick Powell in Slow Burn, a suspense play produced and edited by William Spear.
I'm standing here staring at a clock on a dresser in a crummy hotel room. I've been watching the minute hand drag itself up the face of the clock, and I'm not going to pull my eyes away from that minute hand until it touches 12. Because at 12, the slow burn that started in my insides way back 3 months ago, the slow burn that built till my whole body was on fire, is going to be soothed. Yeah, in another few seconds, it's going to be 12 midnight, and I'll be able to breathe again. Then they can come get me. I won't care. There it is. I can make that call now.
Harold?
Let me speak to Todd Sloan.
Sports department, Todd Sloan speaking.
This is Johnny Wilson.
Johnny?
Don't interrupt. This call is a cinch to be traced. I got a lot to say. The cops have a tight circle around this town, and I know I got no exit. But before they get me, I want to clear a few things up. Now listen to me. I did it. I'm not denying it. I'm telling you why I did it, and you're going to print it because you're a right guy.
Look, Johnny,
shut up. I don't have much time. It all started the day I fought in Duville, Pennsylvania. Dania, my wife, didn't want me to fight, but to me it was the fastest way to make a buck. I was just beginning then, right after the war, and the coal town was the best I could do. I was fighting Tony Tadro, a good boxer and a puncher. And the second round was just squared off, and the crowd pulled their feet roaring the guy's name. Not mine, not Tony's. Me, it didn't throw, but Tony, it did. He dropped his guard just long enough. Tony was flat on his back, out cold. I let the referee raise my mitt. Then I walked to Lefty Wilkins, my manager.
Nice work, Johnny.
Thanks, Lefty. What was you shouting about?
Ain't you heard? The hometown kid who won that Medal of Honor blew into town today. Not only that, he blew into the arena just before you tagged Tony.
Well, I'd have glad hand the kid myself then. He made it easy for me.
You don't have time. We're to meet Courtney Barr at the Club Tree and on in 30 minutes.
Okay.
And just this once, let your tongue lay flat inside your face. I'll do the talking.
Okay, I said, okay.
You saw Johnny fight tonight, Mr. Barr. He's good.
It takes more than good these days.
We know that, Mr. Barr. That's why I ask you when. All we need for him is the right build-up and the connection.
Now, look, when I engine a show or a nightclub or a fighter, I want a reasonable chance to get my money back. Lefty, you never brought a fighter into the top yet.
But this time it's different. Johnny Wilson is the next champ.
Oh, don't beg him, Lefty. If he's too blind to recognize a good thing when it's shoved in front of him, let him get a seeing eye dog.
Oh, I'd take a chance on Johnny if he had an exploitation angle. The way it is now, there's too many good boys bouncing around. Don't need the build-up or have to go into him. No. I'm returning to New York tonight. Goodbye, gentlemen.
He's got nothing.
Nothing but money. Someday I'm going to walk into a bank and look at the stuff. You know they keep the trap behind little cages? Uh-oh, there's that kid again. The metal boy. Name's Chuck Masters. They say he got 30 japs.
30 japs? Well, I'd like to meet the hero.
Well, it looks like maybe you will. He's coming right at us.
Yeah, pardon me, but aren't you Johnny Wilson?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I got to the stadium just in time for the knockout. Sure like to congratulate you.
Oh, thanks. 30 japs, huh? You've been pretty busy. Me, I was in the medical corps, Walter Reed Hospital. Have a drink, Chuck?
Oh, no, thanks. I can't stop. My family's waiting. I really have a favor to ask, Mr. Wilson. I'm chairman of the Juvenile Delinquency Committee.
Oh, let me offer my congratulations.
Thanks. Now, if you'll offer just one more thing, your services in an exhibition.
You mean a benefit?
Yeah.
Look, Sonny, you're a nice, clean-cut American boy, and I like your style, but the only benefits I fight are for the Johnny Wilson Fund.
Now, wait a minute, Johnny, wait a minute. After all, we don't want to see no kids go wrong, do we?
Hmm?
Who are you figuring on Johnny fighting?
Well, nobody yet. I just got the idea.
Do you box, Chuck?
Me? Well, I did a little boxing in the 39th Infantry, strictly amateur.
Then it's a natural. You box, Johnny.
Oh, now, wait a minute. I couldn't.
Sure you could. And you look like a welter, too. If you get into the ring with Johnny, it's a deal.
Good idea. Good publicity.
You don't understand.
You can't ask a guy to fight unless you're willing yourself.
Especially for nothing. You do, we do. You don't, we don't.
Well, okay, it's a deal. Thursday night at the stadium.
Yeah.
All right, Lefty, what's the setup?
In the ring Thursday, I want you to make him look good. I want the kid to think he's a wonder boy. I want to sign him.
And then?
Then I take him to Barr as my new fighter. Medal of Honor and all. Oh, Barr, like that. Endorsed by Congress.
Keep talking.
We've got some of the exploitation angle he's talking about. And with the dough we make on Chucky Boy, we'll finance you to the title.
Give a load of the crowd.
Any more people come in, or have to ration the oxygen?
That's what Barr means by exploitation. That Medal of Honor drags them in. There it is. Remember, Johnny, don't win. You don't have to lose, but don't win.
Well, it was a fair enough fight. Like Lefty wanted, I didn't lose it, I didn't win it. The kid was a cinch to sign, and Lefty wired Barr to find out if he was interested. He was, and now we're in New York in the Copa Club, signing the contracts.
There's one thing, Lefty. Now that Chuck is signed, where does Johnny here fit in?
Oh, Johnny's going to stop boxing for a while. He's going to groom Chuck.
Me? I wasn't having any conversation just then. I was watching Chuck watch a long-haired, slinky dame come towards our table. She had on a gown that had no straps and didn't need any. There was sweet rhythm in her walk, and she wore a hands-off look that beat blood into a guy's head. She stopped at our table, and Chuck's mouth flopped open. I said, "Well, gentlemen, this is my wife."
Hello.
Danya, this is Chuck Masters. Sit down, baby.
So you're the new fighter?
Yeah.
I hate fighters.
Oh, you'll frighten the boy.
And I hate the parasites who live off.
Oh, have a drink, baby.
Why do you take that, Johnny?
Shut up.
Hey, new fighter. Why don't you duck out before they knock that gentle look out of your eyes?
I don't want to fight, Mrs. Wilson, but I need money.
Johnny looked like you when he first started.
And after only 4,000 push-ups a day, look at me now.
Childhood sweethearts. Sweetness and life. Now he's not happy unless I wear gowns like this.
There's nothing wrong with that dress. Hey, baby, have you heard? I'm going to stay out of the ring for a bit.
What?
I'm going to teach Chuck here a thing or two. Who can tell? With me behind him, he may get to be our next champ.
You've given it up, Johnny. What happened?
He's just taking a rest, Daniel. That make you sore?
Not me. It just sounds like Johnny's using his head. And that sounds so strange, it makes me suspicious.
Ah, great little kidder, ain't she, Chuck? Hey, Mr. Barr. Come on, baby, let's dance. Now the publicity buildup started. Chuck was a hero. The story of the signing hit the papers coast to coast, border to border. The Fighting Marine. They traced his medals to every beachhead. I even came in for some publicity as Chuck's best friend, the guy who was sidetracking his own career to train him. And on the day Chuck signed for his first fight, with Whitey Carnes in the Bronx Coliseum it was, who should come in to give him his medical but my old CO from the Med Corps, Doc Peterson.
Hey, Corporal Johnny Wilson. Well, don't make me say what are you doing here. Tell me.
I'm a fighter, Captain.
Well, well. That's a far cry from Walter Reed Hospital, huh, Johnny? How you doing?
So far the Army paid off better. Doc, this is Chuck Masters.
Oh, hiya, Chuck. Say, according to all the publicity I hear, you're going to be the next welder champ.
Yeah. As far as money, we opened a training camp in the Berkshires. I taught Chuck to box, and he learned fast. His left wasn't too good, but his right was okay, and he was shifty. 3 days before his fight with Carnes, Chuck and me were in the ring, sparring.
Hold it, Johnny. There's Danya.
Hello, Danya.
Hiya, chump.
Well, baby, I didn't expect...
All right. What are we waiting for? Oh, it's you, huh?
Hello, Lefty.
Training camps is no places for dames, you know that.
Yeah, that's right. You never watched me train before. What's the magnet?
I got the day off, and I wanted to watch the process whereby they turn a guy like him into a guy like you.
I looked at her lips while she was talking, and the thought that she might be hoping for somebody else's lips on hers, Chuck's maybe, tore at my inside. The gong sounded, and I went for him.
Take it easy. Take it easy.
Cut it out, Johnny. What's the matter with you? You nuts? Why are you slugging like that?
Well, I figure Chuck is about ready for anything. Come on, Chucky boy, put him up. Let's see if you can take it.
Johnny, take it
in. I really cut loose then. I've been storing it for a long time. I belted him good. He went down and stayed there. When they carried him out, he opened his eyes. But he didn't look at me, he looked at Danya. And she looked back at him with tears in her eyes. I should have killed them both then. Todd?
Yeah.
So hold it a second. I want to gander out the window. The cops in large numbers, Todd. They won't find me for a while, and I only need a little more time to finish. Well, Chuck won his first fight, naturally. He was getting the slow, careful build-up. He won a second fight over in Jersey. So then Lefty began to book him. He said Courtney Barr wanted Chuck to go out and make a tour, get a list of knockouts so he'd have a record. No, I sat on my mitt. The day Chuck got back from his tour, he called, and Daniel invited him to dinner.
How was the tour, Chuck?
Oh, fine. I had a couple of fights that were terrific. In Denver, I fought Willie Myers. What a boxer. But I found his weakness. See, when he was getting set to throw his right, he always flipped his elbow just a bit. From then on, he was my meat.
You're beginning to enjoy fighting, Chuck.
Well, why shouldn't he enjoy it? There's money in it.
Sure. 50% of the purse and a bonus. Don't forget the bonus. Scrambled brains, cauliflower ears, and a nose smattered all over your face.
A good fighter keeps his nose straight.
Johnny was just like Chuck. Fighting kills a man's veteran. I'll get the dessert.
I'll help you. So I got no instincts. I'm just a bump, huh?
Cut the pie, Johnny.
Oh, give me the knife. I'm not worth anything, huh?
I stay with you because I'm trying to salvage what I think is still there.
And that crack that I used to be like Chuck is now.
Johnny, we can still save it. I want it to be the way it was.
You stay away from him.
What? Come in and finish your dinner.
You heard me. Stay away from Chuck or I'll finish him. Every sports writer was wondering who was going to fight Mike Gruen. Nobody got a crack at the champ unless he fought Gruen first. I knew who it was going to be. Me. And with the money left, he got out of Chuck's fights. That was the deal we'd made. But, well, I was getting itchy about it. All this time, I wasn't getting any particular buildup. We were on the lake cruising around relaxing after 2 weeks of hard training. Bar and Chuck were watching a kid horsing around doing handstands in a canoe. I took Lefty to the other end of the launch.
Yeah?
Yeah, look, Lefty.
I know, Johnny, I know. Now, don't worry about the crew inbound.
Maybe it would be smarter, Lefty, if you gave up my contract on the surface. Then you could hold off Chuck while my new manager signed me for that match.
I can't, Johnny.
No, why not?
Now, don't get mad. But I had to give Barr 50% of your contract or he wouldn't back Chuck originally. But I got it fixed.
Well, you dumb, stupid... I spun around and saw a canoe floating bottoms up. Chuck was ripping off his clothes, but I got out of mine fast, too. Me and Chuck hit the water together.
You see him, Johnny?
Huh? No. I saw the kid, but I wasn't telling Chuck. He'd come up about 20 yards away, and he went down in the same spot.
Hey,
this was going to be publicity for me. I dove for the kid, grabbed his hair, and pulled him up. When the boat came up alongside, Lefty hauled him in.
That's it, come on.
When they pulled me into the boat, I saw Lefty point to the landing.
Oh, look at that carload of reporters that just drove up.
Chuck, you and Johnny get out of those wet clothes. I'll take care of the reporters.
Reporters? Well, send them along, boys. Photographers, bring them on.
That evening, I was sparring with Chuck, sharpening his footwork, when Danya came up with the New York papers.
Don't you two ever get out of that ring. Oh, and by the way, congratulations.
Huh? Oh, you hear all about the hero stuff on the lake?
Yeah. Congratulations.
But she wasn't looking at me. She was looking at Chuck. I hopped out of the ring, grabbed the newspapers out of her hand. The story was there, all right, in big block headlines. Chuck Masters saves boy from drowning. Medal of Honor winner does it again. Me? I wasn't even in the comic section.
This is all wrong, Daniel. Johnny saved that kid.
Yeah, Johnny saved that kid. Now, Johnny's going to save himself.
Where's that Lefty Wilkins?
Oh, that's a dirty trick, Johnny.
Chuck, you're trying to tell me you knew nothing of this. Your picture and life history on the front page.
I swear.
Now your eyes open, Johnny. Look what they've done to Chuck. Had to make him lie just for the sake of publicity.
I didn't lie. And what publicity?
Your fight with Mike Gruen. On the sports page.
The whole double cross opened up like a filthy sunflower. I was the patsy, the fall guy, the jerk, the dummy. I was going to be the next champ. Yeah, the next champ under the dunce cap. I wanted to pound someone, something, anything. My eyes focused on Daniel.
I'm glad this has happened. Maybe, Johnny, now you'll give up. We'll have a chance to live decent, normal lives. I'm glad this has happened.
I spark-plugged this whole thing so I could get that Gruen bout. I fixed it.
Stupid, stupid, stupid.
Shut up!
Me? You miserable skunk.
Come back here.
Let her alone.
Oh, I've been waiting for this, Chucky boy.
Come on, take it easy.
All right, now. Throw Wilson off the grounds.
Yeah, throw the bum out. Throw him out. Get out of here.
Out all right, and while they were doing it, I was thinking I was going to kill Lefty Wilkins. That was definite. And I remember that all Daniel worried about was Chuck. Chuck's character. Chuck's gentle look. Yeah. I was going to kill Lefty. And for Chucky boy, I was going to think up something special.
very special. Day after day, I'd wake up with a new idea, but none good enough. Then one night, I walked into a bar and saw someone. Someone who was going to give me the answer. It was my old CO, Doc Peterson.
Corporal Johnny Wilson. Come on over. Bring a drink with you.
Thanks, Captain. Still medicing for the boxing commission?
Yeah. Still fighting?
Yeah, off and on.
Glad to see you, Johnny. Hey, you're the second guy I've seen from our old outfit recently.
Yeah?
You remember that lieutenant in the chemical corps who nearly lost his eyes? I saw him. I met his new wife. A real mess. I guess we didn't do such a good job on his eyes.
Eyes? What do you mean, Captain?
You remember the fool got bichloride of mercury in him. Severe corneal lacerations. Lucky thing we caught him when we did, or he'd have gone permanently blind. it's a terrible thing when a man loses his eyesight. Yep. Suppose it was a man in your profession, huh, Johnny?
Yeah.
Good thing a guy can tell when that stuff gets in his eyes. And a guy can always tell. Burns like mad.
Yeah, I guess it would.
Well, I gotta be on my way, Johnny.
Captain, how long would that stuff have to be in a guy's eyes to blind him permanently?
26 hours about, if he's in top condition.
The captain left. Me, I walked the streets all night, most of the next morning until the 42nd Street Library opened. I went through 5 medical books before I found what I wanted. Eye anesthesia. Pontiki. Causes loss of sensation in the eye without affecting the eyesight. I went up to the training camp. The groin bout was in 3 days. I had to get back in favor, and I piled it on good. I played it with hearts and flowers, everything. Sorry, that's the way it is, Chuck. I'm sorry for the hassle I caused. I'd sure like to be with you for the night of the fight.
Well, okay, Johnny. It'd be funny fighting a local match without you in my corner.
Sounds fishy to me. You ain't the kind to forgive.
Well, it ain't fishy, Lefty. Since Daniel left, things have been lousy with me. I'm out of dough. I gotta eat. I need the job.
He gets the job, Lefty. He rates it. He taught me everything I know. I want him in my corner.
When we walked down the aisle in the garden for the ring, I had 3 things in my bag. A long, sharp knife for Lefty Wilkins and the Pontikane and bichloride of mercury for Chucky Boy. At the end of the 4th round, Chuck was way out in front and Lefty was beaming all over. Well, nice going, Chuck.
He's a cinch.
Then I reached for the Vaseline that every fighter has smeared over his eyebrows to keep his eyes from getting cut. I had the Vaseline loaded with Pontikane. I smeared it all around those eyes of his. Now all I had to do was wait until the Pontikane took effect. The next 3 rounds were a nightmare. Chuck seemed as good as ever, and Gruen was weakening fast. Suppose he got knocked out before I got the bichloride in Chuck's eyes. Well, everything's still okay, Chuck?
Hey, sure must be pooped, Johnny. He hit me in the eye 3 times that round. I didn't even feel it.
Yeah? That's all?
Come on, Tommy. Swam my face. We'll all call water, boy. Next round, I'll kill him.
He leaned back. I picked up a sopping sponge from the outer bucket, the one with the bichloride, and I swabbed his face and kept swabbing it while the liquid ran over his forehead and down in his eyes.
And this is it.
He didn't even wince as the poison drained under his lids, into his eyes and over his eyeballs. He started the 8th round strong and cocky. He pushed Gruen all over that ring. And then all of a sudden it happened. He stopped and put his gloves to his eyes, trying to rub away the creeping blindness. Gruen played it cagey. He thought it was a trick. But as Chuck desperately hunted for him, Gruen caught wise and he piled into Chuck. Gruen tore his head off. He hit Chuck with everything but the ring post. Chuck kept going down and coming up for more. Oh, it was beautiful. I picked up my bag and left the corner.
On the way out, I stopped for a moment where Lefty Wilkins bent forward, agonizing in his seat as he watched the championship go out the window. He didn't even move when I shoved a knife into his back. The crowd was screaming for the kill as I walked out.
Still there, Todd?
Yeah.
The law's going to be in a second. The reason I couldn't call you in time for your bulldog audition is I had to be sure the 26 hours was up. Otherwise, you could have warned Chuck and his eyesight could have been saved. I want him to stay blind.
All right, grab him.
Take it easy. Take it easy. You can have me. I got what I wanted.
You admit you killed Lefty Wilkins.
Sure, and it was a pleasure. And Chuck, the champ, how does he like it? Got any jobs for fighters who can't see?
Why don't you ask him?
What?
Hello, Johnny.
Chuck, well, what are you...
Yes, Johnny, he can see. He's not blind.
But you can't see. I don't believe it. You can't.
Your old CO was at the ringside, Johnny. Doc Peterson. He knew what it was the minute it happened. He fixed up my eyes.
You can't see. You can't see. You can't see.
You're the one who's blind, Johnny.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 23rd, 1950 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.